Welcome back, folks, to HBA Conversations and Connections. A special thank you to this year's sponsor, Ogilvy Health. When healthcare impact is your goal, let Ogilvy Health be your partner. Today, we are connecting with the talented Suzanne Lepage, who is not only revered for her subject matter expertise in private health plan strategy, she is also steeped in purpose towards making a difference. She is a trusted advisor to many, a thought leader, a connector, and I think that Pivot might just be her middle name. We talk about personal branding and networking, the importance of being clear on your goals and having a North Star, pivoting in your career and how to make decisions on opportunities, and showing up in life as your authentic self. All favorite topics of mine. She is someone you could chat with for hours. And if you're like me and interested in learning more about the market access space, she is a wealth of wisdom and hands-on experience. All right, a little background for you. Suzanne is a private health plan strategist who bridges the pharmaceutical and group benefits industries. Prior to beginning her consulting practice, she was a national manager of private healthcare with the pharmaceutical company Hoffman La Roche Canada. During that time, she developed and executed private healthcare strategies and managed a patient support program for biologic medications. Prior to joining the pharmaceutical industry, Suzanne worked in group benefits in a wide variety of roles for almost 20 years, which included managing the drug programs for a major Canadian insurer. She is a frequent speaker and contributor to both private market and pharmaceutical industry conferences and publications, as well as a guest lecturer for the University of Waterloo Pharmacy School, a subject matter expert for legal cases, an editorial consultant and source for a variety of publications, and she offers private and group training sessions. As we close out Women's History Month, where we take the time to recognize women's contributions, let's celebrate Suzanne for her impact and important work in Canadian healthcare. I thoroughly enjoyed our time together. We laughed, we learned, and we walked away with a few ahas, and I hope you do too. All right, here we go. Welcome, Suzanne. I've been eagerly awaiting this conversation, and I'm so happy it's finally here. So you are a fountain of knowledge on navigating all things private health plan strategy. And clearly, your subject matter expertise is undeniable. If you just speak to you for a few minutes, it's quite obvious. What I love most about your story is that you're a connector and you're a bridge. So to kick things off, hoping that you can give us sort of a snapshot of your career today and what excites you most about what you're working on.
Well, I call myself a private health plan strategist, and really what I do is I bridge the pharmaceutical and group benefits, group insurance industries, both of which I worked with in the past. And what I really do is use my experience to help the pharmaceutical industry understand the private insurance industry, and then vice versa, help the private insurance industry understand pharma. But in between that, I also work with stakeholders like patients and doctors and government agencies, really anybody who needs to understand this intersection in the Canadian landscape. And so I really feel that what gets me excited is when that I can bring value or information to people who need it the most.
I feel like you're a Jane of all trades, Jack of all trades, Jane of all trades. I feel like you've done so much, and it's very interesting to read up on you and to research you. On your website, holy moly, your website boasts a plethora of projects and media and publishing activity. And so you're significantly accomplished. You know, trajectories are never straightforward. And, you know, your trajectory into the consulting world wasn't, you know, quote unquote, a normal path. Could you walk us through how you got into it?
It's actually interesting, Nicole, because, you know, I do get people who are actually planning to join consulting or become a consultant and ask me for advice. And I say that I'm an accidental consultant. After working in the insurance industry, I made the leap to pharmaceuticals and was working in the pharmaceutical industry for about 3 years and ended up in a situation like it happens with a lot of people where I got laid off and, you know, was going to take the time to decide, do I stay in pharma or do I go back into insurance? Where do I want to land next? And while I was making those decisions, I had people contacting me in both industries to say, hey, we're just trying to solve this problem. Can we chat with you? And then, hey, would you mind speaking at this conference? And after about 6 months, I said to my husband, I think I need a separate phone line. I think I need some business cards. And, you know, here 16 years later, I'm a consultant, but a purely not a planned strategy or career. It really just happened to me. I guess I filled the void where it was needed.
It's really interesting. A lot of leaders say that, that their plan, that opportunities have, you know, have found you, as you say, right? Or have arose in your path. And you, in order for that to happen though, that means you would have had to establish expertise and, you know, branding and reputation, right? Because people don't come upon you, for no reason, but oh my gosh, accidental consultant. That's my new favorite. It's my new favorite term. So, I love aha moments. I don't know about you, but I have them pretty regularly. What was your aha that made you realize you were on the right career path?
You know, I would say, you know, I can't name just one, but there are times where I felt like the work I was doing was making a difference, right? That I, my gut feel about like, maybe we should do it this way or recommend doing something that way and actually seeing that that would pan out. You know, I thought about this topic. And so I remember one time when I was at a private payer conference and we were talking about the impact of a certain disease on an employer. And as you probably know, due to confidentiality, very few employers know what their employees are dealing with. And so we actually had a video at the conference to show what it was like to live like with that disease. And I remember standing at the coffee table afterwards, and a plan sponsor, which is what you might call an employer, but the company or the organization that pays for the benefits, and they turned to me and said, you know what, that could be one of my employees that's dealing with that disease, that condition, that I did not have any idea. And I thought, okay, that was a good recommendation that really it got the message across. So that's one of many, but I think that's what I try to do, is if we can make a difference to help each industry understand the other and move towards a better working relationship.
Wow, that's a great example and definitely an aha moment. Talk about being able to visually, paint a picture. What a great way to do that. I love the making a difference part as well. Purpose is something that I know I strive for every day. And working now back in the oncology space, I certainly find that. So wow, I love that. So you have been in part of many sectors. You've been in pharma, insurance, legal, academia, private sector, and you've pivoted. What do you think has helped you be as successful as you've been through these transitions?
And again, I don't know if they're transitions, because it's not like I moved from one to the other, but I sort of circle around in all of them. And I think that my credibility hopefully speaks for itself, so that, you get a call from someone like academia. I do guest lectures at University of Waterloo in the School of Pharmacy. And someone saw me speak who worked at the School of Pharmacy and said, hey, I bet your students would like to learn that. When it comes to legal, I've been an expert witness. And again, someone was referred to me and says, she knows a lot about this topic, so maybe you want to talk to her. So I think that being a credible resource in one situation has led me to others.
Yeah, it sounds like the experiences that you've had, or the opportunities that you have had, have led to experiences that then have led to further experiences, right? So not just your credibility and your subject matter expertise, but how you showed up in that moment, right? And I would imagine how you have treated other people and how you've interacted and collaborated has also played a big part, right? So it sounds like it's this really interesting kind of train of this path that follows that you've had. And of course, like, personal branding, reputation, they're everything these days. And obviously you have them. It sounds like you've built a really strong personal brand over the years. What do you think is the most important element of creating a personal brand that resonates with people?
I think consistency. One of the things that I like to think that is, if I'm consistent, I never have to try to remember what I said to one person or the next, right? I just have to be genuine to being me. And I sort of have a North Star in terms of when I do my work, is I try to say, like, is this achieving my goal, right? Is it helping me bridge these two industries. Like, how can I improve, access to medications through private insurance? How can I improve a good understanding of what it takes to bring a drug to market? So I think that helps me a lot. The other thing is I can be brutally honest. And when I say brutally, hopefully it doesn't always come across brutally, but just sort of like someone may contact me for a project and I'll say to them, you know what? I really don't think I'm going to help you succeed. So I'm going to pass on this project. Or I might say, I'm conflicted. So I had to do that just this morning. Is I'm working with one of your competitors and I'm sorry that I don't think I can help you. And I think people remember that. Oh, they do. They do remember it. I know that because I've been doing this for a long time. And someone will remember a statement like that and said, thank you. Like, I appreciate your honesty and your openness about what you can and can't do.
Oh, for sure. Do you know what? So one of my strengths slash improvement areas, depends on the situation, is also brutal honesty. So as one brutally honest person to another, I can tell you that that is really hard to find. And I find that people are not as honest as you would like them to be. And so that also leads to integrity, right? Because like you say, people remember that for sure. I love your the North Star. I'm going to create my own North Star because of this conversation.
Now, and that drives what kind of projects I take on as well, right? Mm-hmm. So it kind of goes to not just your branding and how you relate to people, but what do I want to be remembered for, right? Like what kind of things do I want people to know me for, right? And so I think that helps me as well because, sometimes I have different things that come to me. And yeah, we all have to earn a living, but I also want to make sure that there's alignment with what I'm trying to be, recognized for.
It sounds like you're very focused on you have a plan and very clearly focused on what you're trying to achieve.
But that came that actually, over time, Nicole, like that didn't happen like week one or year one. It was more like when I was placed into some tough decisions, right? And I had to say, how am I going to decide on these tough decisions when you're just a practitioner of one, like you have to make some tough decisions is I figured that was the way I'd do it. So I kind of figured it out as I went along. It didn't start that way.
Absolutely. And when you're newer in your career, it's built, there are some of the folks that are listening today are newer in their career and it takes time and really just those experiences, right? To be able to be put into the situation and have to figure it out, right? Mm-hmm. And to make decisions and sometimes succeed and sometimes fail, right? And it's about how you manage that failure or that mistake and how you learn from it, right? So you're right. It is. I can say in my couple of decades now, I'm a very different person than I was, 20 years ago, and I make different decisions. Speaking of decisions, so this is a great question. We all have busy lives and full plates, and I imagine you are no exception, looking at what's going on in your world on LinkedIn and on your website. You must have an abundance of these opportunities that arise because of your credibility and because of the experiences you've had and because of your wide network. What's your process for deciding how, which projects you're going to take on or which speaking engagements? How do you make those decisions for what's right for your personal brand?
Well, I think as I mentioned, I kind of compare it to what I think that I want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. There are some things that, I'm asked to do it. Some things I'm asked to volunteer for, or some things have an honorarium, some things pay. And I try to keep a balance of all those things. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I kind of say, is this accomplishing my goal of bridging these two industries and improving the understanding of the market? So that's usually what I focus on.
I feel like in these days when, time seems just to be going a lot faster, right? And time is like one of our most precious resources. And so I know I struggle with having the many lives that I leave and the many roles that I have, how to make those decisions. And so I think a North Star will be helpful. So you have been on many teams, obviously you collaborate every day still. You've really, now you have more of a independent kind of opportunity to work. What does working independently in your career at this point really mean to you?
Well, working independently has its advantages and its disadvantages. And so, I mean, I'll tell you the truth. I've been conscious about staying fairly independent. And one of the reasons I've done that is that I only have to be responsible for what I deliver, what I'm accountable for, that kind of thing. So that's one of the main reasons. And also, I haven't really met a lot of people that have the dual career background of both knowing both industries. So that just gives me a lot of flexibility and independence. And it also doesn't, I don't have to worry about, you know, staff development and finding the right team and that kind of thing. So in a selfish way, I just focus on myself. I would say one of the biggest disadvantages is that, you know, I don't get the team pizza parties and the Christmas things, and I don't have a tech support and I don't have an accounting department. So I don't have any of those supports, whereas some other people in my role have brought on, you know, students, interns, staff to help them with those things. I've purposely not chosen them. And so those are some of the things that I miss from time to time. But I'm also pretty self-motivated, and so I think that that helps me a lot. And, you know, you find other ways to resource the things that you need.
Yeah, you must be motivated. How do you achieve that? How do you, where you see those gaps, or maybe gaps not the right way to phrase that, but how do you fill in those areas where you feel like you might be missing out on?
So are you talking about social or more operational?
Either.
Okay.
So I think socially, you're pretty social, it seems to me, from our interactions. And it seems to me you've got lots of engagements going on. So you probably have a lot of, I would assume, a lot of interactions socially. But operationally, how do you manage that?
Outsource. So whether it's your accountant or your tech support or even people that you know that have expertise where you need it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of other people with side hustles, side gigs that are trying to freelance and that kind of thing. So it's just tapping into that network to say, hey, I'm looking for someone who can do X, and trying to resource that through your network. And so that's one of the reasons I also love to network, is you just don't know what you don't know.
I love that. When I think of, when I hear outsourcing too, I also, what automatically equates in my mind is delegate, and which is great because it frees up your time, right, to do the things that you are most passionate about. As you know, I think you've spoke to this. What are, as an independent consultant, what are some of the biggest challenges that you face, and how do you stay motivated? It sounds like you're self-motivated, but there's got to be a process, or is it inherent?
I think I'm one of those people that's self-driven. So whether that's in my personal or business life, like I want to accomplish things. I'm very type A, accomplishment motivated. So whether that's, you know, home decorating or accomplishing a personal project to that. So I think that I'm motivated that way and very can stay on task. So I think that that helps me a lot for sure.
I was, as you're speaking, I'm just thinking about how this wildly successful career that you've had that spanned, you know, you would have collaborated more, you know, on a team basis, I would think, in your other roles that you've had, right?
Correct.
And so I think that you've gained such a perspective, and with experience also, I think, probably helps becoming, being independent as well.
I hear what you're saying. And I think that, you know, from time to time, I'll get, you know, whether it's a headhunter or whether it's a client that says, hey, come work with us, right? And I do pause and think, hey, it'd be great to be part of a team again. And it'd be great to have like all the perks and the benefits. But one of the things that I love about being independent is I get to choose what I want to do and what I don't
want to do. Yes, yes.
And so, and I don't have to, I mean, I do deal with politics as it relates to some of my clients' issues, but I get to be a pretty much a free spirit. And I think that that's what attracts me the most, is that, you know, if I want to go to the beach this afternoon, well, not this afternoon, but let's say in July sometime, I can do that, right? I have total control over these things, right? So, yeah, I think that that's probably what drives me. And then, and as I said, it gives me the ability to pick and choose as much as I want.
And that's what I love, the power of choice, right? The power of choice to be able to do and the freedom to be able to do what you want really is what life is about, right? So you can pick the things that you're most passionate about and you can attribute your energy to that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's definitely a benefit of being in an independent world.
Yeah.
Because you get to manage your own calendar and manage the things that you want to do. So, okay. Shifting topics to talk about from also a fellow networker. I love networking as well. And I know the many benefits. You seem to be very well known for your ability to connect with people across industries. And really that's your raison d'etre, it seems. How do you approach networking and what's your approach to building, you know, really long lasting, meaningful connections and relationships?
When I was first starting out in my career and especially in consulting, there was actually two different books that I read that have stuck with me. And
a lot of
people have read the book, The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes.
And there's actually an update recently. And, some things that he was actually talking about, what's a tipping point to go from an idea to a trend? And that was the objective of his book. But he talked about two different types of people. And the one is called a connector. So, being a connector between people and things and that kind of thing. And then he also had a concept called mavens, which is people that connect us with new information. Both of those things are something I aspire to be and I hope that I am. And as I said, the objective of explaining that was for him to explain how things change. But I think that those sort of labels or titles stuck with me. The other thing that he talked about is what we call the stickiness factor. And I had to look it up because I want to make sure I got it right, is that you want to make sure that your messages are memorable. And there are people that I've met, this year that first met me like 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And they'll say, I remember when you explained something this way, and it's always stuck with me. And so I think that some of those things help. The other thing I'll mention is there was another book that I read, and it was called Get Clients Now, and it was like a marketing system for independent professionals, and it really was a real eye-opener of how we can approach our business. And so it included things like speaking and sharing information and writing articles and that kind of thing, and it just showed me the value of sharing yourself and sharing your information organically helps you grow your network and grow your business. So those two things really stuck with me as sort of life lessons. And I bring them up only because some people are saying, well, what could I read or what could I look at? Well, neither of these things have anything to do specifically with networking. Neither of them have anything to do with consulting, but they were key resources for me when I was, starting out as a consultant.
Okay, I have an offshoot to that question. So the connector and the maven. So, what I love about talking to people who are such deep experts in their space, which you clearly are, is that, you have this wealth of just knowledge that's there. Do you take the time, and if you do, how do you choose? Do you mentor people and, do you enjoy that?
Not specifically, but I'm open to anybody that reaches out to me. So I have over time people that are at a turning point in their career or are curious about what I did. I will never say no to a meeting unless it's not practical for whatever reason, logistics or otherwise. So I will always say yes to a meeting because I just never know where it might take me. So I don't purposely mentor people, but I definitely will help people out because you never know where that's going to take you in terms of the discussion. So I would say that's my approach to it.
Well, and that's my next question is, have you been mentored? Because I assume that you, out of your plethora, your wide network, that there must be people who have, who've impacted you and helped you along.
Yeah. So not in a formal way, but informally, there are people that I trust a lot. So whether they were more senior to me earlier in my career that had an open door that I could bounce things off of, and I've since continued those relationships. And then there are just other professionals like myself, like in a related industry, and I'll call them up and say, have you ever run into this? So it's more about like, what do you do if, right? And so I, less than them being mentored, but people that I trust for advice and counsel.
Yes. That's the benefit of the network, right?
Yes.
I like to tap into people who have
expertise and perspectives different than me, because then when I face a situation, you know, exactly what you're saying, you can reach out to people and ask them their advice or their opinion, and they can look at something totally differently than the way that you're looking at it, right? And it really can help. Yeah, and I imagine you have a very wide network for that. So the other thought I was having is, you know, I really like what you said about messages are memorable. I think that's so true. As you were saying that to me, people, I think it's what you say. I also think it's so much about how you make people feel. Because I have had people that have reached out who I haven't talked to in 20 years and to ask an opinion or advice on something. And it feels like regularly they say things like, you know, it's like we haven't skipped a beat kind of thing, right? Or they'll say, and they'll share how the experiences that we've gone through in the past, how we handled them together and how I made them feel in that situation. And I thought, it's not just about what you say, it's about how you say it. And you're very well spoken. How did you get to be so polished?
Oh, lots of false starts and experience and, you know, that kind of thing is that that happens over time. Although I have to say, like, I was, you know, I was in the debate club when I was in high school, and I did public speaking, and, you know, I did the Dale Carnegie course way back when. So I'm just a natural when it comes to that kind of thing. So, you know, some people play the piano and some people do dance and some people play hockey. I would say that a lot of my extracurricular activities surrounded by that. And then taking that a step further, when I, early on in my career, I still remember the first time I was asked to give a talk at a conference, and my VP said, I think you can do this. And so I prepared, and I did it. And then she goes, yeah, I was right. Like, but you know, I never had that confidence myself. But I think the other thing about speaking or presenting is being confident in the content that you're talking about, right? So if you ask me to go up and talk about surgical techniques, like, I would never, ever in a million years feel comfortable, even though I learned it all, because I just don't know it. But I'm talking about things that I know and I know well. And I think that that helps me with my confidence as well.
Yeah, that makes a big difference. That's for sure. How have you seen, because you have this deep, you know, experience, I think, you know, you're really well poised and positioned to answer this next question. How have you seen pharmaceutical and insurance industries evolve over the years? And is there anything that sort of stands out most to you?
So I think the word I would use for that is complexity. So the innovation and complexity of the types of new drugs that are coming to market, we're no longer doing small molecule, low cost drugs. Those targets and those products, you know, our history, as science has evolved, we've seen more complex medications, innovative medications come to market, but they also have a higher price tag as well.
Yes.
So as a result, the private payer industry, who wants to, you know, ensure that they provide access to medications for those that need them, they've had to change their model too, to accommodate that complexity. And, you know, the drugs that were the high cost drugs when I first started my career are kind of a way back in the rear view mirror. And, you know, we're talking about drugs for rare diseases. We're talking about gene therapy. Some of these are nothing short of miraculous, but we're trying to deal with the complexity of delivering them to patients as well as paying for them. And so that's, to me, what stands out the most, is that the challenges are bigger and more complex, and nobody has all the answers, but that's one of the reasons that I think that we also have to collaborate across these industries, is how do we resolve for that? And that's where I like to position myself, is bringing together stakeholders across these different groups to say, how can we work together to pay for the innovation that's there for all of us, like my family, my friends, anybody that would need access to these treatments?
I could ask you 1,000 questions about that topic, but I will spare our audience that today. That'll be an offside conversation. It sounds like you're so passionate about, you know, this space, and what keeps you excited about the industry?
I would say that I'm excited about the opportunities for us as people, as humans, in terms of treating the illnesses that come to mind. And I'm excited about a private payer industry that rises to the occasion. One of my biggest concerns as a Canadian, although there's a lot of political issues, which I won't discuss today, is that if we have universal pharmacare, the ability to have variety and access and everything changes dramatically because we won't have that variety of access. It's going to try to be one size fits all, and that concerns me. So I would say that what keeps me excited and motivated is that we continue to have viable pharmaceutical industry, a viable private payer industry, and still have government coverage for those that need it. So trying to fill in the gaps all around.
Yes. Access to innovation certainly concerns me, or lack of access, potential lack of access in the future also concerns me. So I share that. And it's because of people like you and teams who do great work that are, you know, hoping to keep those channels open, right? So as a potential patient and caregiver, I thank you for that, because that paves paths and gets work done. So switching thoughts about more back to career, and for those folks who are looking, because you are very clearly a queen of pivoting. So do you have any advice or thoughts for those who would like to change or pivot into a new industry, something that's, you know, outside of their scope? What advice would you give them on how to navigate this kind of transition successfully?
Well, you know, you're kind of asking the wrong person. Remember at the beginning, I'm an accidental consultant. So, but to that point, I think sometimes I was kind of naive, right? Like, you know, the picture of someone jumping off the side of the pool and holding their nose and jumping into like the cold water. I think I did a little bit of that myself, right? Like no time like the present, right? And so, you know,
I think you're accidental, but you're also calculated in some ways.
But you're asking me at the time to make the pivot. Like I really don't think that had I thought it through too much, I might not have done it, right? Because there's a lot of risks inherent to being self-employed, right? That, you know, in and of itself, right? So I would say do your research, understand what you're getting into. Make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. I remember someone asking me for help in terms of like they wanted to turn into a consultant. And then they had a young child, like a baby at home. And I said, you know, you think it's going to give you more flexibility, but you also, if you have bills to pay, you're going to have to work your butt off, right? So make sure that you understand what you're getting yourself into and why. So do your research, talk to people, understand what to expect, make a bit of a business plan, a financial forecast, but also don't let the analysis paralyze you. What they call that, analysis paralysis?
Paralysis, like, yeah.
You don't want to think about it too much, because we'll never do anything. I mean, the people that have taken the biggest risks have been the biggest successes too, right? So it's a combination of knowing what you're getting into and understanding what needs to be done, and making sure it's the right time for you.
That's good advice. That's sound counsel, I would say. Yeah, for sure. And again, having that network available to be able to, you know, tap into could really help, you know, to make those decisions, right? You know, at this point in careers, especially for folks, you know, there are a lot of layoffs, downsizings, resizings, upsizings that go on. And I think when you're in those moments, I think they're called landmark moments, those milestone moments, right? Where you can, I think it really behooves people to, you know, think about where they sit and what's of interest to them. And, you know, to take a, it seems to me it's like a big leap to go into consulting, and it takes a lot of guts and a lot of courage. So kudos for you, you know, for doing that.
And situations like that, Nicole, create opportunities, right? So we can't have a headcount to do that, but maybe we can pay a consultant to do a few hours a month to do that. So I always view those times of transition as also opportunities.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And maybe your company doesn't need you, but your competitor might.
Oh, truer words couldn't be spoken. That's very fair. That's a fair point. I often think about consultancy. You know, I have an MBA brain, and so I often think about it, and I wonder, would I ever consider that at some point in my career? And I consider myself to be somebody who has a lot of guts, but I haven't been able to like cross that bridge yet. So who knows? Maybe stay tuned, Suzanne. Maybe it will be a future.
Feel free to call me up and we'll chat over a coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. You are now part of my network, sister. So consider the call will come for sure. I would love to, I think that one of the last couple of questions here that we have for you today, I have seen on LinkedIn some of the things that are going on for you. I would love to be able to come to what you're running. I think it's April the 9th or April the 10th. Although I will be fulfilling my other roles as dance mom. So, you know, very important ballet buns and smoky eyes. So won't be able to come in person, but I would love to show up at another one. It looked really exciting. Do you have anything going on that you're super proud of or that you're really exciting?
Yeah, you mentioned the Pharmaceutical Benefits Bootcamp. That's something I created because it's kind of unique because I'm taking, it's for the layperson, it's not meant for, you know, a clinical person, but like looking from drug discovery to when it's finally reimbursed with the patient and all the steps in between to get there. Because I think there's a lot of myths and misunderstandings about drug development to drug approval. And then you also have from once it's approved to the marketing to the reimbursement. And there's so many things that have to come together. So that session is targeted that anybody wants to learn more about it. And it's April 9th in Toronto. So that's the thing. One of the first things I've actually done completely on my own. I'm usually a speaker or a contributor to somebody else's events, somebody else's projects. And so this one, and the reason I created myself is it didn't exist. And I just felt that it was something that needed to be known. So whether, you know, some of the people that attend are benefit plan advisors, some people work with patient support programs. I have a patient advocate that's interested. So a wide variety of stakeholders. Some other things that I'm working on, like when I say working on, it's just, you know, taking up my time. One of the things that I was pleasantly surprised at is I was invited to provide input to the expert committee that's looking at the implementation of PharmaCare in Canada. And they reached out to me and say, we're reaching out to experts in a variety of industries just to make sure that we understand what's going on. And so being invited to that was kind of interesting. Yeah, right. And I mean, and those aren't things that you do every day, right? And when I think about like PharmaCare is going to impact so many people in so many different ways. And so that's interesting.
How do you prepare for that? How do you prepare your mind for that? That's a big deal.
Well, basically, you know, and the thing is like, it's like 30 minutes of which like they want to, you know, you give your few comments and then the rest is up to them. So I just thought like, what are the most important points that, what would they not know about that I could share with them? Right. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example just because we're chatting is that, most people think of private payers as the insurer. The insurer is actually a supplier to the private payer who's the plan sponsor or the employer who actually chooses and pays for the benefits. Mm-hmm. Like that's a basic concept that most people mix up. So they say the private payer is Manulife, Sun Life, whatever, but they're not. They are a supplier to the true private payer.
Mm-hmm. So, which is the employer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other things that I work on is I'm involved in a lot of events and publications where I think that I can contribute to the industry for furthering thought leadership on some of these topics. Mm-hmm. I have a few opportunities with business and consumer media where I get involved. And so I encourage people, if we are not already connected, here's my connector coming out. Connect me on LinkedIn because I try to post things that might be of interest there as my venue to make people aware of what's going on.
Yeah, you have a great feed. I follow you.
Thank you.
Great feed. Yeah, it's so I guess the last question, given the environments that you're in and these very public and influential, I would say, environments and political in some cases or many, do you ever feel imposter syndrome? And, you know, when you get into these roles, do you ever question, you know, should I be here? Should I not be here? Or have you just established this massive confidence because of all this subject matter expertise and experience?
Well, if I do feel that, then to me, that's a sign, like my North Star or whatever, that I shouldn't be here. Like, so I'm going to decline something, right? So
gotcha.
I'll give you an example. I was asked to do some consulting on a topic that I knew my opinion was completely opposite to the organization that was asking me to consult. Ooh, and I declared it in the like the introductory meeting. I said, I'm surprised you contacted me because we don't see things in the same way, right? And so, hey, why are
back to honesty, right? Back to honesty.
And I said, think about it, right? And it took them a week and they came back and said, yeah, we actually do want to consult with you because we want to see why you're so passionate about your perspective on this topic because maybe we're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so that's my whole point is if I'm in a meeting or if I'm asked to do something where I think that, why me? Then I put it out there. Like, I'm not sure I can be the right person to help you. And here's why. So I rarely feel that imposter syndrome because I'm pretty honest what I can and can't do.
That's a great answer. That's a great answer. Well, look, you are such a delight to chat with and we could talk for hours. And we're going to again, you and I, but I really appreciated that you made the time to join us today. And, are there any parting thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Just, you know, really think about what you want to stand for. And when I say stand for, like what your values are, because that will help direct what you do in your career and in your life.
That is so true. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Well, look, I can't wait to see what is going to come in your future, and I'm going to be following you. And well, thanks, Suzanne. And thanks, everyone, for joining in and listening. And we'll catch you next time on Conversations and Connections. For those of you who would like to learn more from Suzanne, registration is still open for her Pharmaceutical Benefits Bootcamp on April the 9th at the Omni King Edward Hotel in Toronto. You can find details and a registration link in the episode description, so check it out.